Hey, welcome to Razzle Dazzle, a podcast about video games and pop culture with an emphasis on our favorites.
All right, it's Razzle Dazzle time! We're your hosts, Jared and Patrick.
What's up?
That's our sound guy, Joe.
Hello, hello.
Somebody tell me what we're talking about today.
So I've been feeling heated, angry. Irate, some could say, about my favorite hobby, playing video games.
Yeah,
and it's not because of like the games themselves. A lot of the games I'm playing are pretty fun. Some games suck, but like that's always been the case since like the beginning of time.
Yeah, they've had video games since the beginning of time.
Yep. Don't you know when like the earliest humans were like out there? They plugged their CRT into the wall
and they're play like some melee. Pong. Yeah.
No. But recently, we've been seeing a lot of the same issue in a lot of different games. We've been seeing it with, it first started out with like when everybody realized this was happening was like with Cyberpunk.
Okay.
But then we also had it with like Gollum and Gotham Knights and Redfall. And there's so many games where we have this issue where the game comes out and a lot of people buy it before it comes out.
Yeah.
And it sucks. Just under delivers in everywhere that's promised and everywhere where you'd expect the game to be good. And I want to talk about it because I think there are a lot of issues both in the industry and in the consumer base that allow all of this to happen.
Well, hold on now. You just mentioned games that are underwhelming. Let's go ahead and just go into some examples of that. This is my game. Now, this is called The Biggest Game Flops. No matter how you feel about these games now, their release was disappointing. And the general consensus is that they were disappointing to varying degrees. So, I'm going to say the title, and if you guys can tell me any personal experiences you have, or why the game failed and did bad, go ahead and just let it out. Let's start off swinging with Fallout 76.
Ah, Fallout 76. I was excited for this originally. At the time that this game was announced and coming out, I was really big into not RPGs or like role-playing games, but more specifically, there's almost a different subsect of RPGs where it's role-playing games in the essence of you are playing a role, like specifically, not like a level up system and you go through a story campaign, but like the game tells you, you are this, so be this character. And you act out with like other people who are also playing. Big examples of this are like GTA RP, where people are like actually acting like cops and things like that. So when Fallout 76 was coming out, me personally, I was very excited. The idea of a multiplayer Fallout meant that I could be a wastelander and interact with other wastelanders, and that idea excited me. There are a lot of reasons why this game flopped, but I think the biggest reason is just that it didn't deliver a Fallout experience. Like, the game started released with no NPCs. You were just like walking to a place killing things, then walking to a place and killing things, and that's not what people play Fallout for. And I also think that like everywhere where they tried to expand the game were things that people didn't want again out of a Fallout game. The Battle Royale, I stopped following it after the Battle Royale, so I don't really know much outside of that. But I know a lot of people who were interested in the game, including myself, were less interested as they started delivering all of these features that if you're a Fallout fan, you're like, why? Nobody asked for this.
Right.
Did anybody want this? No. So why are you putting it in the game? That's my thing.
I never played 76. I know like some things about it, but I don't really care.
Yeah, basically all you mentioned, Pat. But there was also the Atom Shop, Microtransaction Central. And do you remember when they doxed Fallout 76 users?
They did?
So there was a weird bug on Bethesda.com. If you submitted a request, or I guess a complaint about Fallout 76, anybody can just find your info, including your name and your phone number. Very interesting.
Oh my god! It's not on purpose. Just dox the people who are like angered about. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Truly a comedy of errors.
A comedy of errors indeed. There was one where, like when the game first came out, your mic was always open. Like you couldn't like turn on like a push to talk or anything. Like
I hate
it,
that.
All your mic was always open. And what it led to more often than not is somebody who's playing with like their sound down or on like a speaker who isn't really there to like talk in game, and they're just like talking with their friends as they wander around, and like they're you try to talk to them and they're not hearing you or they're not paying attention to you. Or even worse, they're just completely ignoring that you're talking to them and talking to their friends. I had a situation where I was watching a friend of mine play, and he walked up to this dude and started trying to talk to him because, again, RP stuff, he wanted to be a Wastelander, talk to a Wastelander. And this dude's like, bro, what's this guy talking about? Like, as if he's talking to the people in the same room. He's like, this guy's such a dumbass, bro. Let's talk about, like, Hello Wastelander? What the fuck? And, like, my friends said, they're like, wow, that was mean. And then just leaves. But, like, the mics are always open, so you had a lot of these issues. Or, like, somebody's like, Mom, is the pizza ready? And you're just, like, that's the gameplay experience. It's hard to be immersed in a game where somebody's yelling for their mom.
Yeah. God, I hate that.
By the way, this list is not a comprehensive list. There's probably dozens of other ones I'm not going to mention. But let's go ahead and go on to Sonic 06.
I mean, what is there not
what,
to say?
What is there that can be said that has been said already about Sonic 06?
Yeah.
You know, it's the worst, one of the worst video games ever. Very buggy, very glitchy. It's a complete mess in every single way possible. Gameplay-wise, story-wise, concept-wise.
The best thing to come out of Sonic 06 was the fan dub of Sonic 06.
Oh, okay, sure.
Do you know the fan dub?
No.
Oh my gosh. So there's this group on YouTube that just like fan dubs a bunch of games, and they did a fan dub for Sonic 06. But essentially they like improvise all the lines that all the characters are saying.
I've seen fan dubs for like Sonic Adventure.
Yeah, the Eggman pissed on the moon one, for those who have seen that one. Yeah, so that's the best thing to come out of Sonic 06.
Sure. I mean,
not even the game itself.
Some of the music tracks are pretty, you know, good,
yeah,
for being Sonic.
It's Sega.
You know? You're right. But, yeah, it's a terrible game.
I'm glad you said that, because my only notes were, seriously, Sega, what the hell? Let's move on to Final Fantasy 14.
14, wow.
14. I'd never touched this game. I don't know what
it is. Yeah, me neither. I'm too scared. Yeah, so it's a MMORPG. It's giant.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Still
are we talking the MMO, or are we talking the
MMORPG.
Yeah.
Specifically that.
I have friends who are really into the MMO.
Yeah, me too. And I'm sure if I have like the computer necessary to play that game, I'd be sucked into it, but I don't want that type of... I don't want to be that committed to something because I have other things that I got to do.
Yeah.
Because I know I'll set everything aside, forget a lot of my responsibilities, and just play.
I used to play an MMO. It wasn't Final Fantasy. It was called Black Desert Online, but I had the same issue where like I legit like was putting away other things I had to do because I had responsibilities for my guild, and I like the responsibilities for my guild were more important than my life responsibilities to me at the time.
Joe, do you remember Clone Wars Adventures?
I do.
Yeah.
That game was actually good.
I loved
unlike
it.
Final Fantasy 14. The main complaints were the very bizarre design choices, such as the fatigue system that rewarded players to not play the game.
Sure.
And the infamous flower pot that has 1,000 polygons and 50 lines of shader that made many users lag their computers.
That's
a flower pot.
That's more than the character models.
Yeah.
That sounds about right for Square Enix.
But thankfully, through updates, Square Enix has sort of redeemed this game, and it has a generally positive review.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you guys will definitely not remember this game, Evolve 2003.
Oh,
you do remember that.
I loved Evolve for a little bit. It's free right now because people like were not, didn't care.
You said 2012?
2014.
14?
The release, like the main release for the Xbox One.
It was
day one.
I played this
game
for like a day or two. It's
just the same gameplay loop.
It's okay.
It's like it's cool for a bit.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like innovative or new
beyond.
They tried
doing Monster Hunter but with guns.
Or it's like There are a lot of games kind of taking this approach of like the four players versus one player.
Yeah.
Take like Dead by Daylight, which ended up being a lot more successful. Predator at a game?
Well, yeah, the latest Predator game is exactly that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There are a lot of games doing this. Evolve had a really cool concept with it, and the gameplay is pretty good.
Yeah, sure.
But it's just the same thing over and over again, was my issue with it.
The asymmetric combat system didn't last very long.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go ahead and go with my roommate's pick, Assassin's Creed Unity 2014, or as he referred to it, as the French Revolution one.
Yeah, dude, I got it for free from Ubisoft, while after. Oh, because that one church burned down, so they gave out the game for free because there's a realistic model of that church in the game.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I remember playing that game. The main reason I didn't like it was, like, so much of the content is locked off if you don't have friends to play it with. And at the time that I played it, the game was already dead.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't really know. What was his thing with it?
Well, the main thing is that it was delayed 2 weeks. And even then, when it came out, it was really, really buggy. And it needed 4 patches in the first month. Back in 2014, not a good sign.
Yeah, Ubisoft, nowadays that's just standard.
They gave off like free games as an apology for how bad Unity was. That included Watch Dogs, The Crew, Far Cry 4, and Rayman, of all things.
Huh.
That's crazy. I guess I played it when they already fixed it, so I had a good time with it. But like, you know, yeah, if I bought the game and I had those problems, I would be pretty pissed as well.
Aliens, Colonial Marine, 2013.
Yeah, I have that game. It's all right. You know, it's almost like the concept of Evolve, you know, you either play as Marines, which is just a shooter, whoop-de-doo, or you play as an alien or as a xenomorph, which is actually pretty fun. But I think the alien sequences are few and far between.
That's
with
right.
The actual, yeah.
And the original configuration file for the game had a typo in it.
Really?
Which means that aliens, you know how they're supposed to attack you?
Yeah.
They wouldn't.
Oh,
when the first game came out.
So
the config file had a typo in it.
Oh my gosh. But like, on release.
Yep.
That's something that like...
That's really bad.
This game was so bad that their developers, Gearbox, got 2 lawsuits for false advertisement.
Wow.
Dang.
And to piss off gamers enough to get them off their chairs and into the courtroom, that's saying something.
Yeah.
Even though the lawsuits did not go through.
Interesting. Okay.
Let's see. All right. Now we're going to start getting angry. No Man's Sky, 2016.
I was hopeful for this one. Nowadays, it's a great game.
Sure.
Nowadays.
How many years?
After so many years. When this game came out, it was fly to rock, mine rock. Fly to rock, mine rock.
Yeah.
Fly to rock, mine rock. By the way, would you like to spend money on microtransactions? Fly to rock, buy rock. It's like, I hated that game. I was so excited for it. The idea of it was amazing. This like procedurally generated like infinite universe of like places to explore. It's hard. Just the concept alone is enough for you to be like, ooh, let me check this out.
Yeah.
But just when every planet or like 90% of planets are nothing content wise, it just isn't fun.
Yeah, I already don't like a lot of resource management games, you know, like Stardew Valley, Minecraft. Minecraft is like all right, but like, you know, that type of stuff, if after a while, it wears off really thin very easily. And
well, imagine it was Minecraft, but the gameplay loop was just cutting down trees.
Yeah, no.
That's it. That's all you can do in Minecraft.
I heard like in some interview, like, you can play with other people online and all exploring the same universe, right?
That was the promise when the game came out. It didn't have that.
But I'm pretty sure I heard something like it took someone a month to just see another person while playing.
Yeah, because the universe is so big.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, when the game came out, they didn't have that feature. They were like,
right.
Yeah, sorry, we weren't able to deliver on that feature. And so, like, one of the big appeals was that feature, like, flying around, you see other people on other planets, and there was, like, promised PvP in that.
Yeah.
wasn't there when a game came out. It's just like very another one of those games where it's a lot of high promises and then just completely under-delivering.
Speaking of that, Mass Effect Andromeda 2017.
we're really getting into it.
That's the bad one.
Yeah. Bro, 90% of this game is driving a buggy on the moon. It, like, there's not that much gameplay in this game.
Do you remember the infamous my face is tired meme?
No.
Because one of the main critiques was when the previous Mass Effect games that were from the 2000s had great facial animations, these ones were all the same and all very bland. So you'd see someone going with a poker face going, I can't talk right now. My face is tired. And it was, and there was no choices, no open world. This one got to me. Huh. This one got to me just a little bit.
So they just took the like Mass Effect umbrella and applied it to a game that had nothing that made Mass Effect great.
Like Outer Worlds.
True, true. Battlefront 2017. This one's an easy one.
Yeah.
No, Star Wars Battlefront 2 2017.
Oh, okay.
My bad.
Yeah. That pay to win. Pay to win.
But not really. What do you mean?
They changed it.
They updated
when the
it.
Game first came out.
You could just buy better guns.
You could buy better guns. You could buy Jedi. You could buy Sith. Like, it was just straight up, like, if you wanted to throw money at the game, you could win. Like,
are you sure that was in release?
Yes.
On release. Okay. 100%. That was the biggest critique for the game when it came out.
I kept hearing, I hear that a lot, but I also kept hearing, like, they patched that before it even released. So
it was like
I'm hearing two different things.
It was like 2 weeks into release or something like that. It was pretty quick because people were like, I'm not going to play this game if this is a feature in this game.
Yeah. So, but like a lot of people who are assholes, I guess, just bought everything, maxed out their credit cards just because they wanted to be good.
Well, and it also sucked for the players who didn't want to spend money.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't want to spend money, you legit couldn't play. No, you couldn't play the Jedi and the Sith and some of the elite classes because all the people spending money were taking those characters and classes.
Yeah.
So it was just like very clearly EA just trying to be like, you want to play the cool characters?
There
just give us some money.
Yeah, that's why EA really sucks. But, you know, like,
they improved
after
it. Now
a
it's
while,
a pretty good game.
It's pretty decent.
There is still not pay to win stuff, but pay to progress aspects of the game.
And loot boxes or whatever.
Exactly.
You know,
It's still microtransaction heaven, but that's most multiplayer games right now, so I'm not even going to entirely fault them.
I still prefer the original Battlefront 2.
That's not a hot take at all. The best Star Wars game. I prefer that one, and then if I can't have that one, I'd prefer Battlefront 1.
Yeah, you're
right. If I can't have Battlefront 1, then I'd have then I would take EA's Battlefront 2.
Sure.
Sorry, Patrick. Cyberpunk 77.
No, I agree as well. I was also disappointed on this game of release. I had a beefy PC, so I didn't deal with the problems, but I hyped this game up just as much as everyone else. So to have me be like, wow, look at this game, it's so fun, look what I'm able to do, and then have my friends be like, yeah, my car is in the sky, and I can't drive anywhere. And like, I get it. Like, that game was very, like, another example of like overpromising and under-delivering, and it came down to executives not willing to delay release, which I understand partially, but also the game wasn't finished. And so like it was completely not ready for consoles. There should have at least been a PC release before the console release, but they released it on like PS4 and Xbox, which had no capability of running that game whatsoever. So it just a whole lot of like just disappointments all around. Developers like absolutely disappointed. They didn't even know the game was going to come out until like the day it came out or the day they announced it was going to come out. Disaster of a project. CD Projekt Red, a company that whose philosophy is that good games will like good complete games will sell. Releasing that game was like a slap to the face for every fan of the company, like myself.
Didn't Sony have to give refunds?
I think it was Xbox that had to give refunds.
Oh, okay.
One of the consoles because it straight up couldn't run on the console.
Yeah, that's how you know it's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, 2022.
Okay.
You want to get into this one?
Yeah, I'll get into it. It is not a finished game. We all know this. It is not everything that somebody with really high standards would hope for. But for someone for a casual player who just loves Pokemon and loves playing a new way to play Pokemon, it's a great game. for what it is. Open world Pokemon, the first true open world Pokemon where you get to go wherever you want. You know, Arceus dabbled in it a little bit with open areas, open zones. That's one thing. But it's not a finished game. The graphics look really bad, and that's coming from me where I'm very lenient and I always say graphics don't make the game good, but there's a lot of bugs in the game and it's just very prominent, and it's like it's very hard not to look over that. You know, it's right there in your face. And you know, I didn't pre-order. Yes, I did. I did pre-order this game. I was there.
Copium.
I was there at the midnight release and I was super excited to play and I had an amazing time playing it. But that still didn't separate the fact that there are big problems. And even now, I don't think, I haven't picked it up in a while, but I'm pretty sure most of these issues have not been fixed. And maybe they will before the DLC comes out. It probably it already came out by the time this episode releases. But yeah, Scarlet and Violet's half-baked promised.
The reason I find this one so like irritating
yeah.
is the fact that they already had a Pokemon game in 2022. Arceus,
yeah,
which people
right.
loved.
Yes.
And they could have good sat point. On Scarlet and Violet for at least another 6 months, refined those issues, and
you're
it
right.
would have been maybe not a great game, but a better, more improved game.
Yep.
But what they did is they decided to release it in what, November, October?
Yeah, it was later in the fall. Yeah, Arceus came out in January. Were we both there in the midnight release? I know
no,
I was.
No, I got it like the morning after.
Okay. Oh, yeah, right. And you brought it to the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. Pokemon usually release a Pokemon thing, a Pokemon game, DLC, every year. So they could have just waited. We could have had Arceus this entire year, and I would have been fine with it, but...
And now we're going through a Pokemon-less year, and for who knows how much longer,
what?
Probably the next main
the DLC.
Series... Not the next main series game.
Oh, I see.
Probably the next main series game will be on what comes after the Switch. Based on previous trends.
Hmm.
So Pokemon just really shot themselves in the foot with that one.
I guess.
There's no plans, at least that we
yep.
know of,
no.
of something past the Switch. Nintendo, even when the Switch came out, was like, this is going to be our mainstay console for a
yeah.
long time.
I think the Switch still has maybe a good 4 years
based
left.
Based on previous trends.
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, we had the DLC this year. So hopefully that's something.
Hopefully.
Well, if you don't like that game, if you don't like Scarlet Violet, you're not going to like the DLC.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Lord of the Rings Gollum 2023.
I heard is a terrible garbage game.
The game opens
yeah?
with an apology.
Really?
I didn't know that.
What?
The game opens. You can look this up. We can read through it
Gollum?
If you want for the podcast. It opens with an apology being like, this game did not hold up to our standards. It's sad. It's so sad. Donkey has a great video on it. Tons of people have great videos on just how disappointing this game was on release. It's just not fun. Like, not only is it a bad game, it's not fun. It's buggy. It's ugly. There's nothing good in this game other than the fact that if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, you might have pre-ordered it. And I'm sorry for you who that might apply to.
Okay, I found the picture. I'm trying to get it loaded here.
Read the apology to us. Apologize to us, Jared. On behalf of Tolkien.
Okay. It says... Let's load. Okay. It says, Dear players... We would like to sincerely apologize for the underwhelming experience many of you have had with Lord of the Rings Gollum trademark upon its release. We acknowledge and deeply regret that the game did not meet the expectations we set for ourselves or for our dedicated community. Please accept our sincere apology for the disappointment this may have caused. Our goal as a studio and as passionate Lord of the Rings fans have always been to tell a compelling and immersive story-driven adventure. Crafting a story with Middle-earth as our playground has been the greatest honor and the biggest challenge we have faced so far at Daedalic? Is that what the company is called?
I think so, yeah.
We understand that a game's success relies on the enjoyment and satisfaction of its players. We genuinely value your feedback and have been actively listening to your voices, reading your comments, and analyzing the constructive criticism and suggestions you have provided. Our development team has been working diligently to address the bugs and technical issues many of you experience. We are committed to providing you with the patches that will allow you to enjoy the game to its fullest potential. Once again, we deeply apologize for the inconvenience caused.
That's like the third time.
And we appreciate your understanding during this time. We will continue to keep you updated on our progress and provide transparent communication regarding the upcoming patches and improvements. Your passion and dedication as players have been the driving force behind our determination to make things right. Thank you for your support. Sincerely, Didelic.
Was this one like, the $70 game?
I think it was 60. I think it was 60. But
thank
still,
God.
Yeah. This is like the thoughts and prayers of video games right here. Because like as much of it is an apology, they're not like refunding people or like not taking the game off the market. It's still there. It's people still can buy this game, and they're not going to see the apology up front until they open the game.
It's $50 on Steam.
Yeah.
$50 too much dollars. All right. Listen to me, Daedalic, or whatever it's called.
And $60 for the precious edition.
Whoa. All right. Listen to me, Daedalic. Here's what you got to do. You got to embrace the bad gameness of this bad game and have it for free and then have a speedrunner's like challenge. If you could beat it in like 2 hours or whatever.
Throw
like
a little timer on the top right corner.
No. Just embrace it. Embrace the so bad it's good. Please.
You know what they should do with this game?
Throw it away?
No.
Burn it?
No. They should walk. They should journey through Middle Earth.
There we go.
Reach the volcano. Was it Saruman? And just throw
Mount
it
Doom
in there.
Or something.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't watch Lord of the Rings. I don't know.
They just gotta throw it in the volcano like the ring. That's
well,
what
that would
do.
Ruin all the people that bought this game and expected something good.
But no. It's exactly what they should have done with Sonic 06.
True. Last but certainly not least, Redfall 2023.
I just stopped paying attention to this game as soon as it came out, to be honest. I'll do
Is
the
this
one
the
example.
Vampire?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Enemies spawn on the floor. That's enough. That's enough as is to already be like for a shooter to also have that be like, but then you throw in like all the other problems, the AI being worse than like 2013 AI. Mm. Like there's so much you can fault this game for.
Yeah, it never caught my interest. I just thought of, oh, it's another first person shooter with buddies and it's against vampires. Whoop-dee-freaking-do.
I think the AI is so much worse than 2013 level. I think it's even worse than like 2007 level. Because you can cheese them so easily that they just get stuck behind a car. They will spawn in the floor and they will ignore you even when you're right behind them. Or in front of them, actually. The gunplay is boring, except for one gun, but that's not the exception.
That means the gunplay is boring. Yeah. If one gun is fun, then the gunplay is boring.
Very poor voice acting and animation quality. Did you guys know that there's no cutscenes?
No.
It's PowerPoints.
PowerPoints?
It's like just drawings of here's what happened.
Oh, boy.
Next panel. Here's what happened.
I thought when you said
here.
No cutscenes, it was going to be like a Half-Life kind of thing where you're just like, you're always wandering through the story.
Nope.
That's
no, it's pretty
the
sad.
Worst showing for Xbox newly acquiring like major studios such as Arkane. Arkane made Deathloop, Prey, and Dishonored, and then they released this piece of crap. So
Arkane's been on the has been on the downward trend. Still making good games, but definitely not like they took off with Dishonored, and then every game's just felt like Dishonored. They haven't really like taken anything and like done anything new. Prey, I guess, was the one where people were like, "Oh man, Arkane's really got it in them again." But then Deathloop was fun, but still just standard for Arkane. So Redfall, it's kind of sad to see because I was already feeling that sort of downward trend with them, and then to see Redfall out of them, it just kind of makes me a little sad.
Well, that was my game, and do not mistake games for being fun, because this was not fun. If you can put yourself in the shoes of a consumer around any of these times and were promised full products and even pre-ordered these games and were delivered Gollum,
yeah.
You could clearly be disappointed.
Yeah, I think Redfall also now opens with an apology, too, if I'm not mistaken. Wow. I could be wrong on
that
one.
That's really bad.
Two games this year open with apologies.
Yeah, and it's something that, like, a lot of the conversation around this has gone against the consumer, which, frankly, there is a little bit of fault there. Pre-ordering is something I encourage you to do if you're really excited for a game, but I would discourage you to do in general, because a lot of times, even the games you're most excited for, like I was for Cyberpunk, or like you were for Pokemon Scarlet, by pre-ordering, you're only guaranteeing that if the game is bad, you're just encouraging the company to do it more. At the same time, I don't think consumers should be blamed for this kind of thing. They're promised something, yeah. And that promise is something that like should be held up.
Yeah, what would consumers be blamed for? Like, we're told, like, hey, we're going to get a good freaking game that we're excited for. Okay, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I get the game, period. It's locked and loaded. I'm, like, in line, and I'm ready to play day one.
The idea is that pre-ordering is the reason why you'd go against consumers. Pre-ordering is irresponsible. I don't agree with this
take. Irresponsible?
Because you're buying a product before you even know what the product is, technically.
Okay.
It's something that everybody does all the time, even outside of video games.
Yeah,
what I find
yeah.
more of the fault comes to is the way companies are approaching these games. And I've done a lot of reading, watched a few videos in terms of this stuff. It goes back all the way to how software was before to where how it is now, where when games came out before, it's on a disc, you load it in, and that disc has to have everything ready.
Yep.
But with the trend that software has had, not just in video games, but throughout the entire software industry, is that you can now release a product and then add changes to it later, whether it be through DLC, video games with DLC and whatever, or if you're a big Photoshop person, you already know how much that's changed over the years, and it's like a monthly subscription. But what this allows for is that you can set a deadline, release a game that's not entirely finished because you know you can add to it later. Now, this isn't entirely a faulty system. I mean, some games have amazing DLC. Look to like Skyrim. To like Skyrim itself was a great game, and then you have the Dawnguard DLC, and so much extra content they added in to make the experience more enjoyable. But then you have the other side of it where companies can find excuses to develop a game later after release. Because of these things, or have promises for a whole thing and release some of those promises and then promise the rest later as DLC.
Right.
One of the big things that I've been kind of looking at is looking at three different companies in terms of what they've done. Shout outs to Modern MBA YouTube channel who did a video about this, kind of diving into these three specific companies, where we're looking at CD Projekt Red, which we've already talked about a little bit.
Yep.
Square Enix, which we've already talked about a little bit. And the studio behind Rockstar, I forget their name, Twin something.
Twin Peaks?
No. If you could look it up for me. It's
behind Rockstar Games?
Yeah. Because they also have some other...
Their parent organization is Take-Two Interactive.
Three companies with drastically different approaches to this new sort of software approach to games. Or if you look at CD Projekt Red. CD Projekt Red is a company that, again, I mentioned earlier, their philosophy is that good games will sell. And they had that when they released Witcher 2, got tons of rewards, made a bunch of sales, and ended up being like one of the things that boosted their company's profits the most.
Right.
So then they were like, let's iterate on this further, and they released Witcher 3. Witcher 3 caused this company to skyrocket because not only was it an amazing game, but people also found it, loved it, and even the years after this game came out, it still brought a semi-consistent revenue stream, dropping 30% per year, but it's predictable and it's pretty good in terms of like a game being released and then continuing to get sales. The game sold, I think, more than 50 million copies, and this is something that can cause a small studio like CD Projekt Red to now be one of the biggest studios that can promise to work on something like Cyberpunk. But then Cyberpunk is a similar thing where they want to make this amazing grand game, but then they underdeliver because a lot of the stuff I mentioned, executives like releasing it or not deciding to delay it even though it needed delays, developers being overcrunched over and over and over for a long period of time and the game still not being ready because it's just such a large promise. And when that game came out, still, because of the way these things are, people pre-ordering and all the hype surrounding games, game still sells a bunch, but then I mentioned Witcher 3, 30% over years, like, decline. For Cyberpunk, it was a 60% dip after the first year.
Yikes.
People, which CD Projekt Red was not happy about at all. That kind of thing shows, like, while they can deliver in this way, is having these games where the entire thing is like, we have to release this big, all-encompassing game. The success of it can cause huge success for a company, but the downside is it's a heavy risk. Right. If the game isn't seen, if the game doesn't take off, the company takes heavy hits because these games are really expensive to make. And that's where we get into Square Enix. Square Enix has games like Tomb Raider, Just Cause, Deus Ex Machina, a few others where these games... Final Fantasy. These games are like well-known, loved, admired, critically acclaimed, but they're always a risk because they don't always sell as much as their targeted goals. Deus Ex Machina, the newest one to have come out, was a fantastic game, critically acclaimed, sold 1 million less copies than what Square Enix projected out of it and what they needed to in order to return a profit on it. So, like, despite the fact that they made this great game, it by itself wasn't enough. So Square Enix decided after that and a few other games that flopped like that, they like Just Cause 4, they decided to get rid of this model of releasing these full games and instead adding to a lot what you see now, DLCs, in-game purchases, microtransactions, things like that, to where even if the game isn't hugely successful upon release, there are other ways to make back that revenue.
Funny, I just thought of it. Final Fantasy VII Remake is probably a great example right now where, you know, Final Fantasy VII is a big game. It originally came out in 3 discs, and that's the original plan for the remake. They released disc one only a few years ago, and now they're just going to release disc 2 and 3.
On the next, like, release? Just all the rest of it on one disc?
No, two discs.
Oh.
It's releasing the same time, but in two discs. And also, even between these releases, we have, like, Final Fantasy VII. It was, like, that side story with Yuffie or whatever, you know, still, like, other DLC stuffs for the remake, you know, and that kind of goes with what you're saying.
Yeah, and we see a lot with games like Marvel, when the Marvel game, when that came out. There's a few other ones where they, instead of building like a singular game to be released and have everything it needs, they also add microtransactions and added content later on. Like like the Marvel game is still getting more updates. As time goes on, because they want to keep bringing in that player base so that then they can spend money on microtransactions. But poor the player guys. Base isn't there. Like the lowest it's got, like it's averaging at around 1,000 players right now, which is pretty bad for a game. Especially a game as big as a Marvel game. But that's the approach Square Enix took because these singular entity games weren't enough for them. And Rockstar realized that too. And ultimately, I'll finish with Rockstar and Take-Two Interactive because they realized this and did it right. Where it isn't just about implementing microtransactions and DLC and season passes, but doing it in a way that makes people want to come back. Take GTA 5. GTA 5, when the game came out, is a single-player game with like this mediocre online.
Yep.
But they took the software approach of like adding more and more onto it, where GTA Online started getting expanded more and more. Every few months, you'd get updates on different ways, like holiday updates, but also like heist updates, and all the way till now, where there's tons of content in this multiplayer game that keeps players coming back. And while GTA made tons of sales for its original game, like it's, I think, the most selling piece of entertainment of all time.
I don't know.
I don't doubt it.
It also makes tons of money continually because the online is somewhere that players like, and the money that they spend on it isn't like what players would find insulting or demeaning in terms of microtransactions.
Right.
Instead, it's like to add to their experiences. Mm. And they did that with that. They did it with Red Dead Redemption 2. Red Dead Redemption 2 took, I think, like 8 years to develop or something like that. It took a very long time between both games. When the game came out, again, amazing single-player content with a multiplayer add-on that they started progressively adding stuff in to keep players returning. They have that microtransaction option, but if you've played these multiplayer games for either Red Dead or GTA, you know you don't need to spend money to enjoy the multiplayer side of it.
Right.
But if you do, you will get like your enjoyment out of your money's worth. Same thing with Borderlands games, where like Borderlands 2, for example, had like 15 pieces of DLC, just adding more content of like bosses and areas and whatever. It's things like not just being like, hey, here's some new stuff. Take like Fallout 4. Mm-hmm. Fallout 4 did DLC, but it's like, hey, you know that building mechanic that nobody uses? Well, here's this new thing for that building mechanic nobody uses. It's not going to sell.
Yeah.
Whereas if you take Two Interactive's approach, where you're like, hey, listen, people really love this online thing, but they're complaining that there isn't enough there. Let's satisfy that need. Let's incorporate this event that has these like new gameplay missions and whatever, and it's completely free. But like your money spent will add money to the game, so you could buy more of these new cosmetics or gameplay items or whatever the case.
Right.
By Take-Two taking this approach, they have skyrocketed from where they were prior. It was already a really successful company, but then it takes off even more. Then they also have the money from like 2K, whereas mm-hmm. the more cheap way of doing it, where you just have card packs and things like that, that's also funding it. But those games were actually the experiments for them to figure out what would work for games like GTA and Red Dead, where like 2K and FIFA and all the, or not FIFA, that's EA, but 2K introduces like buying players and things like that, and like some of the general like sports game ways of monetizing to see what works for in-game monetization. And then taking what works and applying it to the game, but also keeping in mind, why does it work for 2K? And will it still work for GTA? Because if they just took the same approach they took for GTA, wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
Or same approach as they took for 2K, wouldn't have worked. All that rambling to say, the main thing is just with this modern Take-Two video games, you have this concept of like games can be changed after their release, which is not something we saw 15 years ago.
Right.
Companies have decided that it's too risky to keep doing games the way it was before, and rather they have to have these extra monetization things, which I agree on. I think without these extra pieces of monetization, I don't think you should need them, but I think they're really good to take a lot of the risk away from investing in these kind of titles. The important thing is how you're doing it, because if you're doing it like a FIFA, you're really like you'll make your money, but at what price to the actual quality of the piece? Like FIFA's market is never going to expand beyond soccer play. Like it's never going to, video game fans are never going to play FIFA. Only soccer fans are going to play FIFA.
Right.
But that's a successful case. There are a lot of games that flop because of this. And there's a lot of games that flop because there's this sort of mentality of like, they're still taking that like high risk push out approach, but then not prioritizing again the product for the consumer. So you get a Golems and Redfalls and things like that, where they're like, well, we made a deadline. We have to release it on this deadline, but it's not done. It's fine. We'll just fix it later. And then if the game gets enough attention, then people yell at it. Whereas if it doesn't get enough attention, then most people end up being fine with it. Like No Man's Sky, as much as it was a flop and everyone yelled at it, it wasn't like a loud enough commotion that people stopped playing the game.
Right.
There are still plenty of people playing the game, which is why they're able to continue implementing and changes to where now it's a good game. But it should have been that like three, four, or five years ago.
Beginning. No, I totally agree. The biggest like things for me when it comes to pre-ordering games, it's it doesn't have to do with the content of the game itself, but like just pre-ordering the damn thing. So my two big examples are is a bad example and a good example. when Xenoblade Chronicles 3 was coming out, Nintendo announced that they're going to do a collector's edition for the game. And like a month ahead or whatever before the actual release, they like announced the dates of the collector's edition pre-order or whatever on their website. And like every week up until that, they kept announcing, hey, reminder, blah, blah, blah. The day came out and it was like, you know, a Wednesday, 1 p.m. or whatever for us. I was ready. I was there. I was on the Nintendo website to pre-order this because I freaking love Xenoblade and I wanted the collector's edition. The entire site crashed because of how many people were getting on at the same time. The amount of traffic, Nintendo was not prepared for this collector's edition. So I had to wait on that like loading screen for like the queue or whatever so I wouldn't lose my place for over 2 days. And guess what happened? Nothing. All sold out somehow. Because of course there's scalpers too, and that's a whole nother bit, but you can't control that. But I with this computer right here, it was open and charging for 2 days straight on that one screen. And even like the computer's like, hey man, this is taking up a lot of power. I really suggest you exit out of this. And I'm like, I can't. Please. I can't, man. I'm sorry. You gotta hold out for nothing. And then Nintendo was like, oh, we see that we weren't prepared for the amount of traffic, so we're going to have another pre-order release scheduled like 2 weeks ahead. It was better. Like, they could handle the traffic, but I still wasn't able to get what I wanted, and, you know, that kind of sucks because I wanted the thing, couldn't get it because of technical errors on the on Nintendo's side. That sucks.
Yeah. That's interesting, but like it is kind of similar in that sense where like it's like the company isn't aware of where the consumers are at, and that's it's difficult. I'm not saying it's easy by any means, but it's like very out of touch, but also unexpected too for Xenoblade. That much hype for a Xenoblade game.
I mean, that's probably why it happened. You know, I don't know, but like. My best experience with pre-ordering a game and getting something good out of it is Breath of the Wild, or God, Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, but that's something where it's a company that has standards that it hasn't broken.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand a bit more. Like, honestly, I'm not against pre-orders by any means. I think it's a financially irresponsible thing to do. But if you are excited for something and there are benefits to buying it before it comes out, I don't think it's like I'm not against you doing it. I personally don't do it myself because I'm hesitant in case it does flop. And in reality, most of the case, you're better off just waiting until the game's released so you can see if it's the product delivers on promises.
But like I like the collector's edition.
But you know, and that's ultimately like
the main
thing. And that's the draw for these pre-orders.
Yeah, and like what kind of made me upset with Tears of the Kingdom and the collector's edition. Apparently, like, a month before the game releases, they already had, like, the thing out in, you know, for pre-order. They already did it, like, a month before. They never announced anything. It was all quiet and sold out immediately. So I was very bummed for, like, that day for the release of Tears of the Kingdom. Then later, when I come back to actually, like, get my ticket or whatever, the GameStop was like, hey, everybody, we have 15 collector's editions. So first come, first serve. And I'm like, that's freaking awesome. I'm part of that. I was like number 10 in line. So I was able to get a Japanese version of the collector's edition. But I still hate that the quiet releases of pre-ordering something like a collector's edition for a game, for especially a massive game, one of the main pillars for Nintendo, right? Just quiet, like nothing. There's no announcement, but apparently it's still sold out on the website. That doesn't make sense to me. I don't know.
I guess it's just that much hype. You gotta like with companies like Nintendo, there is a lot of hype surrounding any game they release. Like even their less notable titles still.
Pikmin 4.
Yeah, we'll still get tons of pre-orders and tons of things like that. It's I feel like it's not as scary with Nintendo because we know them as a company that delivers.
I know they're gonna deliver. It's just getting the thing to begin with. That's my problem. I know with any other company besides Nintendo, I never pre-order those games. But Nintendo, that's like my safety blanket, you know, security blanket. I know I'm going to get what I pay for the titles I want.
But then you have that confidence in them, and they're not like, and then in an area where other companies are so stressing on delivering because they need those pre-orders, Nintendo at the same time is kind of missing out in that area.
Yeah, I want to play Street Fighter VI, for example, but I don't have the system, so I can't play it. But I still wouldn't pre-order it, even if I did had the means to play it. I just get it when I get it, because I don't know how the game's going to actually turn out. It could be like Street Fighter V again, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
And that's like, ultimately, when we started this, I said there's like a side of it that where it's on the companies. And on the companies, it's a lot of they have to realize what is good about their games rather than just implementing what they know will make money, because those systems that will make money will just occasionally make money. But there is also the aspect of us as consumers where we do need to be a little more careful, especially now where this is becoming a consistent issue.
You can pre-order almost every game that's coming up, and like, I don't know, half of the releases this year alone isn't worth pre-ordering.
Yeah, it isn't worth pre-ordering, or games do come out and people buy them because of the name alone, like Gotham Knights being like a Batman game, but then the games themselves under-delivering or just being generic, like...
Yeah, not fun.
Yeah, there's nothing new or nothing interesting.
Nothing innovative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it is ultimately on us to a degree as well to wait. It does not hurt to wait 2 weeks after release to see if you want to play a game. And yet I feel like so often we do see these sort of like heavy pre-orders or just, oh, that looks like a cool game. Yoink, without taking like the smart consumer approach of like, oh, well, let me see some reviews. Mm-hmm. Let me see what the conversation is surrounding this game. I think, and this has always been the case where gamers have been very impulsive buyers.
Yeah.
But we're seeing that the consequences of that a lot more recently, because companies will implement these predatory practices in order to take more money out of these impulsive buyers. Fortnite is a great example of this, of just like, not everything in the game is really worth buying, but they bring in so much stuff that people might want to buy that it's very, and none of it actually like changes the way you play game or makes it more
it's
fun.
All cosmetic.
It's all cosmetic. Yeah. But like if you play Fortnite a lot, then it's worth it. But the goal of a lot of these things isn't necessarily to get the people who are playing to enjoy these new skins, but it's to bring people into the game. Take like Batman skins in Fortnite or Dragon Ball skins in Fortnite.
Transformers is in and out.
Like all of these things where these aren't where the focus of like Fortnite as a company, they have a fun game already, but instead of like iterating more to the game, or they still do, but like all these new changes where they bring in it completely for free, but then they put in these skins. I'm almost... sorry, I brought it up as if it were a bad thing, but the game is free, to be fair, so I'm a little less for that. But there are a lot of games that implement the same practices for paid games.
Yes.
Where I think I get a little aggravated.
And it's understandable.
Yeah.
My big thing is pre-order bonuses and why they shouldn't be a thing. I'm a fighting game guy, and NetherRealm, backed by Warner Bros. Games, always has new characters as pre-order bonuses. Let's see. MK11's was Shao Kahn. You could play as Shao Kahn again for the first time in probably 10 years. You pre-order that game, you play as him, he's slow. He's terrible. He's not that good of a character.
Right.
On the other hand, Injustice 2, you pre-order that game, you get Darkseid, the big baddie of DC. He's amazing. He's an important part of that Injustice 2 Day Zero meta. And if you fail to pre-order, I guess you're only going to enjoy 19 out of 20ths of the game.
You can't buy it?
Sometimes you can't.
Oh,
sometimes you can't.
Are they unlockable characters at the end?
Buy. Nope.
What?
Nope.
Really?
There are unlockable characters you get from beating the story mode,
but
they're never pre-order bonuses. Those are two different things.
Wow!
Well, and just Injustice 2 and also... Mortal Kombat also have DLC characters.
Yes.
Combat
packs.
Like you pay for characters. So that's not entirely like out of the realm for them, but it is still like
that's,
disappointing.
That's more understandable, but like if it's a pre-order thing,
isn't even out yet.
Yeah.
So you won't know how Shao Kahn plays once you know, the metal hasn't been defined.
Yeah, yeah.
If you see Shao Kahn gameplay and you're like, this is something I want to mess with, you
buy
Shao Kahn.
Or if you just like the character.
Like when I liked Combat Pack 2, where they had Sindel. I really liked how Sindel played.
Right.
Bought Sindel and I wrecked folks. What can I say? Sorry.
But with this pre-order bonus, you don't get to see ahead of time what you're buying.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
It goes into this whole thing we're talking about where it's like, is it really? But then if you don't pre-order, then you don't get the experience and it ends up being like one of the most fun characters to play.
Yeah.
Then you get that FOMO feeling of like, now I don't get to play Shao Kahn.
Pokemon is the worst offender for pre-order in-game bonuses. All you get is like a few Pokeballs and like a revive. Whoop-de-frickin'-do.
Well, I think that's acceptable because
really?
That doesn't change the way you play.
Sure, but like it doesn't give you anything either.
It is true. Also like you're not really being rewarded for the risk you're taking.
Yeah.
You're just giving a few extra items that you can buy within the first
kinda,
5 minutes
kinda
of the game.
Kind of goes to both ends because like on one end, it's like what you mentioned with the one character that came out and sucked as a pre-order bonus. And then it's kind of similar to this where like you get a pre-order bonus for Pokemon of just some things that you can get
no value.
In the game anyway. pre-order, but I guess I've never really been a fan of pre-order bonus myself because again, I don't pre-order, and I've loved the games that have had pre-order bonuses, but also
it's
have ways
in
of
the
you,
base game.
Yeah, but you can buy it. No, not just included in the base game, but you can buy it outside of pre-ordering, like Piranha Plant in Super Smash Bros.
That's a great example.
Super Smash Bros. Is like, hey, you pre-order, you got to play this funny character, Piranha Plant.
Yep.
Not that good, not bad. Or pretty bad, but but fun. But if you weren't able to buy it, you can also just go to the Nintendo store, buy it for like $5-6.
Yeah.
So it encourages you to pre-order, but also you're not limited if you don't pre-order.
Yep.
That's where I like the little happy medium that I find with it. I don't know. But I do understand what you're saying. Like, if anything, I'd be happy if they just got rid of pre-order bonuses.
Me too. That's where I stand, and they're not going to. Mortal Kombat 12 or Mortal Kombat 1, the pre-order bonus is Shao Kahn.
Again?
No, not Shao Kahn. Shang Tsung.
Oh.
Who was the original baddie and a fan favorite character. But if you don't want to pre-order the game, guess you have to wait until it comes on sale, if it does at all, for like $6.
Okay, so he will be purchasable later?
Maybe.
Maybe.
That's a good question.
Oh.
That's a fantastic question.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Damn. So I guess, like, TLDR, be careful when pre-order games.
Also, like, when you... Because modern games, this applies now to where they're going to be released and then updated later. Look at a game when it releases and look at what it's like when it comes out. See what is good and bad and decide for yourself what you want if you want to buy it when it comes out. But also keep in mind what they promise to release later in terms of season passes or DLCs or whatever that case is.
That's a good point.
Because then you can decide further, like maybe I do want to play this game, but maybe I want to wait a year before I buy it because it looks like a great game, but it's not really where I want it to be now. So I'll just wait a year and then buy it then.
Mm-hmm.
I've recently, because that way, or just to finish that thought, that way you're like the most informed and you can really like make conscious decisions of what the games you're buying. You won't be disappointed. Because also what we're getting a lot now is I mentioned Fortnite being that free model where there's microtransactions for you to buy cosmetic whatevers. That's been the case for basically every multiplayer game coming out right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that sort of model, it's almost like it's risky because I've been playing a lot of these games right when they came out. Multiverses is a good example. There's this game called Omega Strikers, which is like League of Legends, but it's air hockey.
Mm.
And then... another game I was playing, I forget. But it's these games that come out, they're completely free, but the in-game purchases and like it's multiplayer games. The big thing is I would encourage people in games like this, Apex Legends are big examples of this as well, don't buy stuff in these games unless you know for sure that this is a game you want to make a long-term commitment for. Right. Because I've seen so many cases where people like get into these games and they buy some stuff immediately just so they have some cool skins for the character they want to play. They play the game for like a month and then dip. And then like the $30 that they spent on just completely useless cosmetics are gone, and it didn't even actually change the experience they had playing the game.
Right.
Whereas if you're someone who's plays a lot of a game, like me playing Counter-Strike or the tons of my friends who play Apex and Rainbow Six Siege, it makes sense for you to buy these things when you know, like, oh, I'm going to be playing Rainbow Six for the next year, and I'm going to be seeing the same gun model over and over again for the next year. Maybe buy one that looks nice because, you know, treat yourself. You're having fun in the game, and it's a free game or like a $20 game. That then makes sense then.
Right.
But just be conscious about it. Don't be like, or do what you want. It's your money.
we don't tell you what to do.
by funding these things, you're only encouraging the industry to continue doing more of it. So just be careful with what you spend your money on.
Yeah. Can I say it better myself? Anything else?
Nah, man. Just be careful. There are some franchises that I admit got me by the throat. Like Halo. I'm going to play every Halo game that comes out. with varying qualities of its goodness.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Halo doesn't have that pre-order thing where their trailers are mostly accurate. Halo 5 was displayed as fast-paced. You'd run into walls, which you got that, but you also got a very boring story. Halo Infinite was like promoted as a reboot, and for the most part, it was. I think you have to be careful with advertisements, and if it's promising too much, that should raise some red flags for you.
Yeah, I agree.
So, just be careful, folks. I don't think you should pre-order games at all.
All right. That's all the time we have for today, guys. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode here on Razzle Dazzle. Make sure to let us know what you think of today's episode somewhere on the internet. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Razzle Dazzle Show and on TikTok at Razzle_Dazzle_Show. Be sure to tune in every Thursday on the Live365 app Eagle Radio Station where we are live. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Chug jug be like.
Okay. That's a cool sound.
All right.